Tuesday. Every Tuesday, we get a couple of our pals together, usually on opposite sides of the aisle. We have a no a-hole rule because we've had a few on. We just didn't invite them back. We sent them to Reardon's way. So today we have two of my favorites, Kurt Barr and Alderwoman Daniela Velasquez. Good to see you, Daniela. I haven't seen you in a while. Welcome back.
Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you as well.
Exciting 13 days so far.
Yeah. No kidding. It's nuts, right? I mean, like, most of the stuff that's been happening happened at 10 days, and it's just like, it has been 10 freaking days. 10 days, and we're invading countries, and we're threatening other ones. We'll get to all that. Congratulations to you again.
Thank you.
Tell everyone about the Eisenhower Fellowship, what it is, and how you got it.
Sure. So I was a 2025 USA Eisenhower Fellow, also with Ryan McClure, who is the executive director of the Gateway Arches Park Foundation.
Oh, cool.
We actually got to spend some time in Germany together. In a quick nutshell, the fellowship was started by the friends and family of President Eisenhower. Eisenhower thought that if you imagine, you talk to people and had dialogue, it might create a better, more just world. And so you pitch a project and the program sends you to two countries for up to 5 weeks. So I went to Germany and Colombia to study open government and how to make government more transparent and accessible and create better civic engagement. I got to spend a few days in Berlin with Ryan. He was working on his project, which is about public-private partnerships and telling hard stories. So we got to meet some fellows, and then I got to travel and learn, and I hope to bring some of those lessons back. I mean, obviously, St. Louis could probably use a few ideas when it comes to transparency and open government and inclusion. So, yes.
That's cool. And Kurt, you started your morning in Jeff City, right?
Yeah, there was a hearing for an election bill, so I went down to testify on that, and then I'm going to end my day here with you guys.
Okay. Was today like a big deal or more like perfunctory, like, we need to talk about this?
So the process is Representative McGaw, who was a clerk for 30 years running elections in one of those small counties. You know, this is her last year as a rep, and she has a bill to reinstate the presidential preference primary back into law, to move the 2 weeks of no excuse voting to 4 weeks, and to do a few other things. More technical on our end, to just make the voting process more consistent between municipal elections and general elections, and just make it a little bit easier for us to do a good job for voters. Mm-hmm. And so the hearing was today to hear the bill for the members of the committee to ask their questions, and then eventually the committee will vote that bill out, maybe amend it, maybe not, and then it goes to the floor, and then, you know, if the House passes it, which they passed this bill last year, then it'll go to the Senate. It nearly passed last year in the Senate, so hopefully this year, her last year in the legislature, she'll be able to get it passed, and we'll be able to do a better job taking care of voters in Missouri.
Okay. Let's start out local, and we'll work our way to national and international. Daniela, what's going on in the city besides monkeys? Like, what do we got going on?
I know. It's like you can't even...
I know.
We're like a meme itself.
I'm no kidding.
And that was like day 10, maybe day 11.
Yeah, uncle, just stop.
But at least we have a goat. I mean, right. I don't know if we're the goat.
Corral
but okay.
Those monkeys.
I love those AI photos.
I do too. Well, we have a lot going on. The board just came back from its legislative break last week. We have upcoming an election in April on the earnings tax, which I know people love to hate. It's actually a very important tax. It creates about a third of the city's budget. So that will be on the ballot in April. You might have heard about a little tussle about the sheriff. but also that we have an interim sheriff, and how that works out is to be determined. But I think all of us at the city are looking for a way to, you know, collaboratively move forward. Obviously, we want our lawmen to follow the law. So I think we're all kind of ready to move into the next phase. And again, hopefully we follow the law with that as well. I've been working on, I know we've talked about a little bit about city manager. I've been working on that bill this past few months. We're also working on some charter changes along with Alderman Devote, and we're working in collaboration with the mayor and the president's office and the comptroller's office on some big bigger structural changes that we think will make a difference. So I hope to continue that collaboration in the future.
Okay. Do either of you guys ever go to the East-West meetings I always hear Elman talk about?
East-West Gateway meetings, I did when I was a state rep, but it's not really an elections thing. But I mean, it's a powerful group of people that funnel a lot of federal money for transportation in our area.
Yeah, it's sort of like just hearing Elman and Mayor Spencer talk about it, it feels like our best chance to get something done regionally. So just wonder what you guys thought about it.
I think St. Charles County needs more representation on the East-West Gateway. We have grown in size, but we don't have more seats on the board. But that, you know, I think that would politically, so there are some people who don't like that because, you know, St. Louis, and then East-West Gateway also has a couple of the counties in the Illinois side of the St. Louis metro area that's on the gateway as well. The last time I had a meeting with members of East-West Gateway, I'm like, hey, can we get more representation for St. Charles? But I don't know if that's going to happen. That's good.
So many interesting things happening nationally and internationally. Like I said, you know, first 10 days of the year. I don't mean this question to you, Kurt, as a smartass. Of all the things that are going on, like Venezuela and ICE and the ICE shooting and Greenland and Iran, is there anything that you as a conservative are uncomfortable with? You're like, this is kind of pushing even me.
So at the national level, there's so much of like what's appropriate, what's legal, what's constitutional. I don't know if the Trump administration has done a great job educating people of, you know, we took this action for this reason, and it's for the greater good for America, for the region. I mean, to say, yeah, we now have Venezuela's oil. You know, that doesn't sound great, you know, because H.W. Bush was accused of going to Iraq for the oil, and so it harkens back to, you know, is this, you know, America, being heavy handed in the region, or is this America strongly protecting the Monroe Doctrine and saying, hey, China, you guys shouldn't have an influence here in Venezuela. We're going to, you know, maintain our sphere of influence. And so I think those arguments could be made if they are, you know, clearly enunciated. But right now, I don't think the White House is communicating that well. As far as Greenland, I mean, there's theoretically a strategic, good in having, you know, more missile defense. But to say, hey, we're going to take over a island owned by a European ally, is that really it strikes the nerve of expansionism and colonialism, and as opposed to, you know, here is the clear harm that we are defending against.
Yeah.
And so it'd be nice if that argument was made better.
Yeah, I don't mind at all. I mean, we're a superpower. I don't mind being a superpower. I don't mind being a force, you know, globally. I just don't want to be the world's D-head, you know, and that's what the Greenland thing feels like to me when you say to a NATO ally, hey, we would like to purchase you, but if not, we're perfectly open to the military option. And I've said on the show, lots of people push back on me, even saying those words out loud to me is very wrong. Not just off-putting. I don't think any American president should ever look at a NATO country and say, we would like you, and if you don't make us a good deal, we'll take you. To me, of all the things going on, that may be the most troublesome. Daniela, what do you think?
Well, I think there's a lot of troublesome things. I'm going to take sort of back the national to local, or not to local, to international, national. I was just talking with a friend last night who is a mother and a family of five, and their health care went up 10 times. It went from $150 on the ACA to, for a family of five, to a premium $1,150, which is, you know, like a mortgage. And so when we think about all the money and all the things that we're spending internationally, it's coming at the cost of, people here. I think you know this, Dave. My family's from Puerto Rico originally. They call it the oldest colony in the world. So on a lot of the military intervention in Venezuela, they're staging it from Puerto Rico. The Puerto Ricans kicked out the military on Vieques about 20 years ago. One of my cousins was a big part of leading those protests. So certainly there's the idea of what colonialism, what cost that expansionism, what the cost of expansionism is, I think are questions that we need to answer. And certainly being strategic. I don't know if going after NATO is really where that gets us in the end. I get that Greenland might be a strategic in a strategic location, but if we're going to war with half of Europe, I don't know if that's strategic either. Mm-hmm. So,
what did you think of Venezuela? No love for Maduro. It's fine. He's gone. Probably a very good thing. But I've been very uncomfortable with everything since then. And you make a good point, Kurt, that I don't expect much from the Trump administration when it comes to communication. Like, for example, he just put, I think, on the Wikipedia that he's the acting president of Venezuela. Like, that's the way we get these messages and such. But I have just yet to have anyone really give me a good reason, legal reason, how we go from we have a warrant for Maduro and we're going to take him back to the United States. And I'm the acting president and we're going to take your oil. And I don't understand how we're doing it. Other than the Stephen Miller credo of might makes right.
Well, I mean, to a certain degree, might does make right. And that's what a lot of international law is all built on is, you know, either, you know, a victor in war, you know, says, I now own this. And everybody else is like, okay, now you own it. Or, you know, you went too far. And we as an international group are going to say we're going to put sanctions on you for taking these actions. You know, it is, like I said, troubling that the verbiage of the reason for the arrest. I mean, I don't think anybody says Maduro is a good person. But, you know, do we have the legal rights to do that? And or, you know, how is America going to handle, you know, Venezuela going forward? Are we going to say, okay, here's a new president, you know, have fun ruling yourself? Or are we going to say we're now, you know, taking you over as a protectorate? Because there's extremes there of to what could be, you know, America's posture. And, you know, depending on what that is, you know, there's a, you know, many different conversations. Yeah. You know, the Bush administration was criticized for trying to make Iraq a democratic system to the degree that it is currently. And so is that something that the Trump administration wants to do, or they just want to say, you know, go ahead, have an election, pick a new president. Yeah. We're cool with that.
So unfair, because we only have two or three minutes left here and we could talk for a couple of hours on it. But what's going on in Minnesota with ICE and in particular the shooting of Renee Good, your thoughts, your opinions on that? Danielle, you first.
Sure. I mean, I think it goes back to the rule of law. And I started this conversation talking about my travels abroad. And one of the things that I consistently heard in admiration for the U.S. and questions is that we always follow the rule of law. And that's what put us above everyone else. And so now, I mean, I'm asking the question, and I think everybody's asking the question, was this in the rule of law? And to be fair, this wasn't ICE's first death, you know, in the Trump administration. I think there was something like 60 other deaths. I mean, it was, you know, maybe one of the more shocking because it was caught on tape and by, you know, who Renee Good was. But I think our question is this following the law? Probably not. Is this the kind of rule of law, the kind of rule that we want? Certainly, I think that there's an argument for law enforcement and enforcing immigration laws, but we've also been seeing American citizens profiled, followed, kids, teenagers pulled out of their car, beaten after screaming that they were citizens. And certainly that sounds pretty un-American to me. So I think we really need to ask those questions and ask ourselves, is this a good use of resources? Is this what we want to be spending our money on as a nation? And is this who we want to be as a nation? Do we want to be shooting and killing our own citizens without regard for the law or for anybody's life?
Kurt?
So the Trump administration put out a meme over the holiday time frame that talked about it was like a tranquil picture of America. It said something along the lines of, you know, America after 100 million deportations, which to say that we need to deport 100 or one third of our entire nation in order to have an ideal, pristine country, you know, even strikes me as a conservative Republican as problematic. And so, you know, the Trump administration needs to figure out what its messaging needs to be on immigration and immigration enforcement and reform. But, you know, to say that, you know, we need to get rid of a third of the nation in order to have a good nation, you know, that is a losing proposition to, I think, all Americans.
That's Danielle Velasquez and Kurt Barr. Thank you, guys. You're the best. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
Welcome back, guys. GGS 425. Happy Tuesday. Kind of gloomy out there. Assuming it's pretty warm, though. I was just saying how weird it is. I'm going to the Blues game tonight in the middle of January in my shirt sleeves. That's just weird.
I like the word, the phrase, shirt sleeves.
You can take the boy out of South Roxana.
I did too. I don't know what I pictured you wearing, like a cowboy outfit.
Did you guys not say shirt sleeves?
I've never said the word shirt sleeves in
really?
My life.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
is it a word or is it two words? Is it shirt sleeves?
It's a good question.
Shirt sleeves?
Yeah, I wish we had the stream up. I'd be interested if anyone else called it shirt sleeves.
I've heard it. I mean, it's a common thing. It just wasn't my thing.
I have a million of those. Like, Wheels, if you make a sandwich out of one piece of bread, what do you call it?
A sandwich.
Open face sandwich.
Fold over.
No.
But depends on how you could. If you fold it over, then that's just a sandwich. If you don't fold it over, then it's open face sandwich.
Relevant question.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Is this a thing people said, or is this a thing that Dave said?
Which thing?
Like a fold over.
I don't know. That's a good question.
We all said it. Yeah,
okay. Everybody said it?
Everyone, it was a local thing,
yes.
At the very least.
If I went to someone's house for lunch, they would say, do you want a sandwich or a fold over?
Oh.
So
they give you the option?
Yeah.
That's crazy. If I go to your house, if I'm a guest in your house, and you don't have the decency to give me the second piece of bread... We're not friends.
As someone who grew up with foldovers, though, they're their own thing. It's almost like a burrito sandwich. Like, the textures are, you know, they're not drastically different, but having a sandwich is different than having a foldover. Now, everyone out there thinks I'm insane.
I would love a burrito sandwich, but in my mind, that's just a burrito in between two slices of white bread.
Rachel had to have some weird things in Grafton. Colloquialisms?
I mean... I don't know. Nothing springs to mind.
No?
No.
No shirt sleeves, no foldovers?
Mm-mm.
Did you ever tump anything over?
Nope.
Did you ever wrench it out?
What it out?
I'm not
wrench.
Sure. Squeeze it?
Rinse.
Are you saying,
you're saying
wrench?
Yeah, you say wrench. No, you say wrench instead of rinse.
And you wrench it out in the zinc.
Yeah.
Why?
That's the way we talked.
It's just a regional dialect.
Is that why, like, some people say farty instead of 40?
Yep, warsh.
Yeah, it's worse than that, though. And I think that was mostly my family because they're from Benton, Illinois. I think they brought tumping
and
wrenching.
So that was a Gloverism, much a...
Tumping was everyone.
Okay.
Yeah. Be careful because you're going to tump the swing set over. Which is a combination of tip and dump.
Tip and dump. Okay. So I'm like, what words?
Always thought was a really good... That's a good word.
Yeah, it's a good word. Yeah. My dad will say warsh, even though he's not from the part of St. Louis that says warsh. I never really got where he picked that one up from.